BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Welcome back to BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time, with old Labour economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. If you've never heard of the annual Bilderberg Conference, it's because, like bankers and the Wizard of Oz, they want to stay out of the spotlight. But we're shining the spotlight right on them tonight, and the amazing thing is most of our press is going along with the cover-up. The West's 120 richest bankers, bosses and royalty are schmoozing politicians, including our Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, today inside a secret meeting in Switzerland. Media moguls inside are sworn to secrecy and the reporters outside are banned. We ask why the secrecy? Why is it not on the BBC News? And hope to hear live from The Guardian's Charlie Skelton now, and We Are Change's Birmingham's John Scobie are at the scene of the crime. And as the annual Farms Open Day comes up, I'll be listing some of the Bristol farms open this weekend. So, some people call it the secret government and the NATO countries. The Bilderberg Group certainly seem to have an uncanny knack of picking top politicians in Europe and the US just before they rise to power. For example, they didn't like former Labour leader John Smith, but they did like the man who rose to become Prime Minister and war criminal Tony Blair. Well, the schmoozing is going on at St Moritz in Switzerland, and covering the annual Bilderberg meeting for the Guardian newspaper is Charlie Skelton. Hi, Charlie, and welcome to Drive Time.
Hello, Mr.
Cosmate. Okay, so first of all, what's the weather like over there, Charlie?
Well, it's cleared up. We looked at the weather report before we came, and it was just a sequence of rainy day after rainy day, but actually it's quite sunny and the Alps look beautiful.
So is it cold?
It has been a bit nippy, yes, but when the sun comes out... that's the weather. Now onto the travel.
Okay. Now, what's the hotel like that the Bilderbergers are all meeting up in this year?
Well, it's it's the typical thing. It's a big old luxurious hotel, reasonably secluded. It's up in some pine woods, and has security and police around it.
So have you managed to sneak in the back way and talk to a janitor or a barman or anything about what's going on in there?
My days of sneaking around it are long gone. There is a little bit of sneaking going on, I'm sure, but mainly there's been people, and there's quite a few sort of citizen journalists here, and a small amount of press, official press, I guess you call them, and they've been taking photographs of delegates as they arrive, and which is very important, because in order to write about this story as a story at all, you have to have some facts, and they, by shoving a camera into the in front of the windscreen of a zooming Mercedes and catching glimpse of whoever it might be, George Osborne or Richard Pearl or Henry Kravis, then you've suddenly got a little bit of a story and they've got some facts, so it allows the press to talk about it.
So one of the problems here is a lot of the people who are there, many of us have never heard of.
People haven't heard of the people.
Well, who's that Kravis guy you just mentioned, for example?
Oh, yeah, well, that's I know. If you've ever read the non-fiction book Enemy at the Gates, you'll know who Henry Kravis is. That's about the Nabisco takeover. He's one of the world's most successful global equity bosses. He runs KKR, which is a massive... you can look up KKR, and you'll see the sort of scale. He's one of the smaller people at the conference. And KKR's worth whatever it is, $16 billion. And his wife is even more powerful than he is. Look her up too. But I know you haven't heard of a lot of them, but you've heard of George Osborne, and we've just heard today from the Treasury, we've had it confirmed that he's here in his official capacity as Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he's got Treasury staff with him, so which begs the question, why aren't we talking about it a bit more?
Okay, and is there any sort of a protest outside? Because you would think, it's something like the G8, for example, they normally have a protest, many of these international meetings. What's it like there in Switzerland?
Well, it's quite a nice tempered group of people. Of, I'm going to guess, John may correct me on this, but of somewhere in the region of 100. I'm just going to, that's, a, you know, 100, 120 people. All, you know, a few banners, you know, a kind of Bilderberg Mafia kind of thing, and a few slogans daubed here and there, but all very good-natured and, you know, a nice vibe. Almost had a little festival vibe. Someone was playing some music, and I think I smelled something on the air that wasn't the Alps.
Charlie, you're there in your capacity as a Guardian journalist, aren't you? This is Martin here. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Are you going to be writing about this in The Guardian? Can we expect some copy from you?
In the paper?
In the paper, or on the website, or, you know, yeah, where are you going to file?
I just filed the story about George Osborne barely a few minutes ago, so that, which I think has just gone up. I've just actually tacking on a little bit, which I'm not sure has gone on, which is, I did the always instructive thing of putting the word Bilderberg into the Reuters search engine and pressing search. And actually, it's gone up from zero results, which is what you usually get during Bilderberg. It's gone up to one result. It's a listing of a budget hostel in Amsterdam. So, you would think that possibly Reuters would better serve the public with news of a four-day conference with the Chancellor of the Exchequer there and other finance ministers and heads of state. But no, that's...
Is your copy going to be in the paper version of the paper, or is it just going to be online?
Sorry, can you say it again?
Is your copy going to be in the paper version of The Guardian tomorrow, or just going to be on the online...
I'm in discussion with the paper version. It's two very different organisations. I'm talking to them now to see whether they'll pick up some aspect of the story. I hope they will. And we filed a short story about Paul going and attending, which he is. It's been confirmed as well. So, you know, it might bleed across or upwards.
Well, you'd have thought, as you say, if he's there, if George Osborne's there with Treasury staff in his official capacity as our Chancellor of the Exchequer, it ought to be covered by all the major media, surely.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But the problem is, one of the problems is that people just don't know about it. I spoke to one of the forward planners on the Today programme on Radio 4, someone that you would think is fairly clued up in terms of current affairs. And I mentioned to him that the Bilderberg conference is happening. He said, oh, yes, the Bilderberg conference, that rings a bell. And I think you're dealing with such profound ignorance across the news media that it's no surprise it doesn't break its way into it, the story.
So, Charlie, is there any evidence, do you think, that there are big decisions being made by these people? Or isn't it just, you know, is it fine just to sort of a bit of a bean fest for a few rich and powerful? And what, you know, do they actually influence the world?
Well, you see, I don't... If David Rockefeller and the CEO of Airbus and the head of Deutsche Bank want to sit around a swimming pool for, you know, weeks on end chatting about how they're going to sell things to the world or buy the world or do whatever they want to the world, that's fine by me. But then you throw in elected officials and then you keep the press and the public at more than an arm's length, at the length of a machine gun, then I start getting a little bit uneasy, and it doesn't exactly live up to the promise of transparency in government that former Bilderberg attendee David Cameron promised us when he took office.
OK, who else is there? You've mentioned George Osborne. Who else is here from the UK?
From the UK, there's Peter Mandelson, and what I quite like about him is that there's currently two people at this year's Bilderberg who have the nickname Prince of Darkness. It's Peter Mandelson and Richard Pearl, the Washington Hawk. We've also got the youngster Rory Stewart, the Tory MP, he's coming, so I'm expecting a high office for Mr. Stewart. That tends to follow a trip to Bilderberg. It certainly did for Osborne and Cameron and Clinton and Blair. So, you know, congratulations, Rory Stewart, on your new job, whatever that will be.
Richard Pearl won't be necessarily known to our listeners, but he's a super hawk, isn't he, in the Pentagon? He's been known for years as a super, you know, he wants to invade everybody, and he didn't find a war he never liked, did he?
Okay, Martin. Now, Charlie, just finally, can you just give us a picture of, at what distance are you being kept away from the hotel? Are you just simply only able to just snap people as they go in and out? Is that it? Because, I've been to a Bilderberg conference a few years ago. This is back in, I think, 2002. And actually, some of the participants were getting it felt that the atmosphere inside was a bit stuffy. The cigarettes were very expensive, and they wanted to come out and chat to the journalists. Have you had any of that?
Certainly not, no. I mean, I would say that I'm going to have to say it's slightly more relaxed than the last couple of years. Certainly more relaxed than it was in Greece 2 years ago. And we're much closer to the hotel. That's a good thing. But, you know, still they erect their protective screen, which is not a security screen. It's just sort of some nylon sheeting in order to keep the photographers out. I mean, it always beats me. I don't quite understand why the delegates don't want to be seen to be going to something so important and so beneficial to the world. That doesn't seem to make much sense to me, but, you know, they like their privacy.
So what's your best guess about what they're talking about right now?
Do you know what? I have no idea. I mean, I tell you what, there's a couple of, unusually, there's a couple of Chinese delegates. So I'm guessing Fukushima, possibly the Germany's decision to pull away from nuclear power. It's very unusual, by the way, for Chinese delegates to be there, but usually they're at the Trilateral Commission. But, but do you know what? I have absolutely no idea, and I just wish there was a press conference so we could ask that kind of question of George Osborne and Rory Stewart MP, rather than talking to each other about it.
Okay, Charlie Skelton, thanks ever so much for that report from the Bilderberg Conference live from St Moritz. We'll be talking to one of your journalistic colleagues down there, John Scobie, after this. Is there anything else you wanted to add there, Charlie?
No, I think we've completely covered that. Oh, no, it's just it's interesting that there's slightly fewer police on the front line than they've employed of private security firms, which I think is probably a good thing. If they're picking up picking up the tab for the security, then I'm less annoyed at the whole event. So that's a good thing.
Okay, Charlie, thanks very much. And we'll be talking to your colleague after we've heard what people on the streets of Bristol think about the Bilderbergs. And incredibly enough, quite a few people have actually heard of them. So here's Marina Morris out in the streets earlier this week talking to you about the Bilderbergs.
Have you ever heard of the Bilderbergs group?
Nope, never.
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't heard of them.
No.
No.
No. Never.
Not in any detail, no.
Yes, I have. I have a friend who tells me about them. Very, very important people. They could be running the world from behind closed doors. We hear very little about them. Some of what he'd say I take with a pinch of salt, but some of it is so... I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to keep a particular status quo in check. Because you look at the trying things that people do try to change by following things lawfully, and whenever they do, everything just seems to get shut down quite easily. It's like you have a say, but at the end of the day, we're going to do what we want anyway. So, I mean, take a look at Tesco and Stokes Croft. That's a classic example. People can say no, but at the end of the day, it's, yeah, we'll let you have a voice, but we don't really care what you say at the end of the day, you know.
If you had the opportunity to address their secret meeting in St. Moritz, Switzerland, what would you say?
Do you know, I don't think there's much point in telling them anything. They're just interested in their own interests, aren't they?
I guess the main issue today is the energy. Whether it's nuclear, whether it's renewables.
Stop taking from the third world countries and give something back.
I think they have to search their conscience very carefully and think about what they are taking at the expense of everybody else. I'm talking about the bankers, of course.
I would say, why is it secret? Why not tell us what it is? If it's that important, why not let the rest of the world know what you're trying to do? And then maybe we support you, huh? For all you know, maybe they're actually trying to do something right, but how do we know if they're not going to tell us? That's where the mistrust comes from, the fact it's secret.
A small peaceful protest is planned. Should the Swiss police arrest the protesters or the Bilderbergers?
Well, let's see the Swiss police arresting the Bilderbergers then.
No, they should not arrest them, but they should be there to demonstrate that that perhaps there is some people which have different ideas.
No, they should not arrest the protesters. They have their rights.
I don't think the Swiss police should arrest either of them.
They are going to arrest the protesters, so it doesn't really matter either way. They're not going to arrest the Bilderbergers.
They shouldn't arrest the protesters, and I'm not sure because I don't know anything about the Bilderbergers.
Well, every year more and more people turn up to cover the Bilderberg conference, and one of the activist groups that does is We Are Change. John Scobie has travelled in Charlie's Bilder bus all the way to St Moritz to cover this Bilderberg conference. Hi, John, and welcome to Drive Time.
Hi, Tony and Martin. How are you both?
Okay, well, fine. Now, first of all, have there actually been any arrests? We were talking there about this whole idea of whether the police, which way the police should be facing, in or out, you know. Have there actually been any arrests so far?
Yeah, yesterday two gentlemen were arrested. There was a bomb scare. It was a little bit suspicious. There was no packages or no bombs that were removed, as far as we're aware. And the gentlemen that were arrested, as far as we're aware, there were no charges made. We have been looking into that to try and find if those gentlemen have been released or what has happened to them. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of news. So it's a little bit shrouded in secrecy, as you heard Charlie say. And those two arrests, as I understand, are the only two. Although cameras have been taken off independent journalists, which I understand is actually against Swiss legislation and law.
Okay, well, what about, your own... I know you've got a whole of the list of the people who are in there. I know this is actually pretty difficult to do, because normally the people who organise the Bilderberg Conference, which is very much linked to NATO, they only release a list when the people have actually left the building. So you've done quite well to get hold of a list while they're all still in there. So who's on there?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I've just picked out a few people. British individuals that people will find interesting. Marcus Aegeus, who's the chair of Barclays Bank, is in there today, along with Douglas Flint, who is the group chair of HSBC Bank. There's John Kerr, who's the deputy chair of Dutch Royal Shell. Richard Lambert is the non-executive director of Ernst & Young. And then, as Charlie was saying, we've got a few of our politicians there, Peter Mandelson, George Osborne, Rory Stewart, and the editor-in-chief of The Economist, John Micklethwaite, is also there.
Yeah, Micklethwaite is almost all of these, but you see, The Economist are a bit naughty, aren't they? Because they send their little rapporteurs down there, but then they never actually mention it, apart from kind of silly... They do a kind of dismissive article every once in a while in The Economist now about Bilderberg. So, what about other people from other parts of the world? Are there any other interesting figures?
Well, yes, there is. There's some seriously interesting figures. I mean, one, I'll start with Henry Kissinger, as he's actually wanted for war crimes in a number of countries across Europe. And we have been told by Swiss authorities that if somebody gets a picture of him being there, he's on the list. If somebody actually gets a picture and can prove that he is in there, that the members of parliament in Switzerland will actually ask the police to go up and go into the hotel and arrest him, which would obviously be great for war crimes, because Henry's been wanted for a number of years.
Can I just ask you to hang on there a second, John? Because even though most Swiss people and politicians are not aware that Bilderberg's even taking place, some have been very outspoken, calling on the Swiss government to ban the meeting and arrest some of the participants, such as Henry Kissinger. One of those is Dominique Bataille, and I spoke to Dominique Bataille yesterday. He's basically a Swiss MP.
I don't believe was the fact that rich people from all the world can decide what is the best for us, for my country, for my money, for my future. I don't accept this. I want to have the right to control what my future by political means, if possible, direct democracy. And what is happening is that Bilderberg is exactly the contrary of my ideas of democracy.
Yeah, sorry about the poor quality of that, but that was the Swiss MP who's actually called for the arrest of Henry Kissinger and also for the police to close the meeting. Anyway, John, back to you again. Your list, does it actually include any of the items which are on the agenda? Because normally when the Bilderberg put that list out, there's a brief description at the top of what's actually being discussed.
No, we haven't actually got the bullet points of the meeting. We have just got the name of the admitted attendees. There's 129 names on that list. As you're probably aware, Tony, there's often a number of names for various reasons that don't appear on the list. And it's only afterwards, when photographs have been taken and people have been identified, possibly weeks afterwards, that obviously those individuals are then held accountable for attending the meeting.
Well, I can just give you an example of that, because I spoke to one of the people that worked at one of the Bilderberg conferences, the last one that took place in the UK up in Scotland, and she told me without any prompting that she'd served Tony Blair his breakfast, and she was quite pleased and quite chuffed. Only thing was, he wasn't on the list in 1998.
And of course, that was the year before he became the leader of the Labour Party.
Actually, no, he was leader of the Labour Party. He was Prime Minister at the time. I think the this is one of the things that they do is they don't include people on the list who it will clearly be sensitive if it's discovered that they're actually in that meeting. Anyway, can I just ask you a broader question? Why did you decide it was important enough to go all the way down there to Switzerland? Because in a way, Bilderberg is a bit of a non-story because we don't know what they're talking about. They're keeping us completely excluded.
Yeah, totally. I mean, nothing really comes out. There are a few whispers. For example, in the Swiss newspaper on Tuesday, they were talking about how the new head of the IMF was going to be chosen at Bilderberg. So that was a leak. I just felt that it was really important for individuals who are interested in justice around the world and holding people to account, especially these politicians and heads of large corporate bodies. And also there's many military people also on the list to sort of turn up and show my support either way that I can, in the way that I can, to do my own reporting by speaking to you, by filming, and by trying to get any information out that is possible. I wanted to mention a couple of the other international delegates there, Tony. Robert Zolek, who's the president of the World Bank, Jean-Claude Trichet, who's the president of the European Central Bank, Pascal Lamy, who is the Director General of the World Trade Organization, Herman von Rumpy, who is the President of the European Council, Josette Sheeran, the President of the UN Food Programme, Keith Alexander is the Commander of the US Cybercom, which is he's the Director of National Security in the United States. And then we've got people like George David, who's the head of Coca-Cola, and Eric Schmidt, who's the head of Google. So you've got a right mixing and melting pot of individuals who hold a lot of power. And I mean, anyone who's not a little bit worried by that and a little bit worried as to why they've not heard of the Bilderberg Group should probably start asking that question.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you mentioned, John, that there are military people there, because I was looking at Jim Tucker's blog, who's been following the Bilderbergers for many years, and he was suggesting that one of the things they're going to be discussing is Libya, because in the United States there's just been a motion passed by the Congress opposing the war in Libya, and one-third of the Republican Congress people have voted against the war in Libya, and this is rather worrying them. They realise that there is no popular support either in Britain or the United States for the war in Libya, and they aren't winning. So I imagine that they're having a bit of a panic about that, and they're discussing what they're going to do, A, to try and win, and B, to persuade people back home that it's a good idea in the first place. And it's very significant that the Tea Party people in the US have finally come out and said, we can't afford this war, what are we doing?
The other thing that bothers me about the whole process is that there's simply no accountability here. For example, they're telling us, look, you've just got to trust us. We're having a little private meeting. Just leave us alone. Actually, what they've done is they've completely crashed the Western world's economy. In fact, this is having effects right across the world. So why on earth should we trust them, John?
Well, as you can probably tell from my tone, I don't. And I feel that you probably shared that sentiment. Obviously, I'm not saying that every person in there is evil and is trying to lead us into devastation, but I'm saying that the steering committee, which is about 30 members, Etienne Davion is the head of that steering committee, I believe that there is some type of agenda or program that annually they wish to move forward. So as you're saying, with Libya, Martin, they want to make sure that either the public agree with going to war with Libya or not to bomb Libya and to take over Libya in another way, i.e. financially through a private bank in Libya, which they're doing already.
Well, one of the big problems has been over the last few years is that there's a kind of imbalance going on, certainly the United Nations and places like NATO, which are supposed to be run by politicians, our elected politicians, and the military are then supposed to do what we tell them, as well as, of course, the banking sector are supposed to be. There seems to be a real problem with the Bilderberg, and you've got a power imbalance. You've got the military in there, you've got the financial people in there, you've got the royalty in there as well, but the politicians are actually only a small minority. So do you think that tells us about the sort of nature of power inside that hotel right now, John?
Well, I think we all know that, you know, power exists within money, you know. At the end of the day, these bankers and these guys that are the CEOs of these large corporations really have a lot more pull than our politicians, because our politicians might be in power for a couple of years. These guys are CEOs for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And obviously, there's no mainstream coverage at Bilderberg. I've seen one Forbes article and one Times Magazine article. The BBC had a little crack at people that were like myself that were attending Bilderberg, saying, well, you know, what's the big problem? Well, I'd say to the BBC, why aren't you here covering, you know, covering this event? If you'll go to the Conservative Party conference or the Lib Dem conference, or you'll go to a football match, or to, you know, if Hello Magazine were covering some footballer's wedding, you know, it would be all over the press. I mean, I don't know today, has there been any mention of the Bilderberg meetings in the UK? Obviously, I'm not there.
No, it's certainly not on the main news. I'm on the main news here. But there has been, you know, obviously bits and pieces on The Guardian and in some other papers. It's all, at this stage, it's really impossible to tell whether it's actually in the newspaper or just on The Guardian website. But certainly, I've just noticed Charlie's coverage has popped up on here. Anyway, just a final word, John. Can you just tell us why you think this is such an important meeting? Have you got actually any real evidence for that?
Well, from my understanding, Tony, and this is factual, people can check this out, since 1954, when the first Bilderberg meeting took place at the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek in Holland, and it was named after that hotel because they didn't actually want to give it a name. They wanted to name it after something which was sort of generic.
So well, that was actually, that hotel was owned by Prince Bernhard, the former SS Nazi, who convened the very first Bilderberg meeting in 1954.
Yeah, I mean, if that doesn't worry people, you know, just that statement alone, then obviously people should check history out and check out the Second World War and see what the SS did in the Second World War. I think the point of what they discussed, I can't remember exactly which year it was, but it is on the public record. Some parts have been leaked out. In the 50s or the early 60s, they actually discussed and planned for the creation of the European Union. Now, that is why last year or the year before we had a 50th anniversary of the European Union. Now, when I was at school, I was taught that the European Union came out of the European Economic Community, which was only actually invented in or set up in 1982. So there's a 30-year gap here where people are saying that, you know, something was being planned behind closed doors in these annual meetings, and 30 years later, suddenly the European Union was born. And I think that there are plans for a North American Union, an Asian Union, and other continents have similar plans. So I would say that there is things to be worried about, because the European Union, as far as I'm concerned, has not done the British people any good. It's not done the people of Europe any good. The currency, the euro, obviously is in a terrible state. And if it's true and these people did actually all plan this 50 years ago, well, you know, why are we giving them this power and this authority? Why is there no oversight? Why are we not insisting in our own parliaments that these guys come out and give us the minutes of what's actually been discussed? I mean, there are no minutes. There are one-line phrases as to say, oh, yeah, we might have a chat about Libya, or we might have a chat about internet security. I mean, I'm involved with business, you know, if I was to make some major decisions in business, I would have to keep minutes for a very small company. These guys are playing with trillions and trillions of pounds, dollars, and I think it is really worrying. Other people don't see it like that, but, you know, I do.
John, where can we find your material that you've been digging out there and other stuff from We Are Change on the internet then?
Most of my stuff I've been sending across to infowars.com. But you can find me on We Are Change, www.wearechange.co.uk, or if anybody wants to get in contact with me, it's very simple, John, J-O-N, at wearechangeuk.co.uk.
Well, John Scobie, thanks ever so much for talking to us live from St. Moritz in Switzerland, outside the big powwow of NATO's political elite cult meeting. What are they up to? Okay, anyway, thanks very much, John. Now, we are going to try something quite novel now, as I ask old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers to interview me for a change about the Bilderbergers. Martin.
Yes, Tony, I'm going to be very tough with you. We're going to start with a very difficult question. What is Bilderberg?
Well, essentially, what I just said, I suppose, which is a kind of political wing of NATO, it seems to be. NATO was formed after the Second World War as a defensive organisation because they were worried about the threat from the Soviet Union. The military and the big companies that were supporting the West at the time, basically, that's what they do. They want to have an interface with politicians in a very, very private atmosphere.
And who attends Bilderberg?
It's about 120 people every year. There's a steering committee, as John was saying, there are about 30 that decide who's going to come, but it's mostly bankers, chief executives, military people, royalty, and there are a few politicians as well that come. But the most worrying thing is that you do have quite a lot of media moguls there too. So we're not talking about the sort of people you'll see on the screen on the television. We're talking about Rupert Murdoch's chief executive and the bosses of some of the big media corporations in the world, such as the Daily Telegraph. When Conrad Black owned the Daily Telegraph, he was a big enthusiastic Bilderberger.
So the idea of Bilderberg was discussed 10 years before the first meeting. But who by?
Well, it was discussed right in the middle of the Second World War, just as the US was entering World War II. The idea of having a conference like this was discussed by something called the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations, in a nutshell, is a private club that develops United States foreign policy. The Council on Foreign Relations, for example, were pushing very hard for the invasion of Cuba in the 1960s because they were annoyed that some of their markets were being taken over by Fidel Castro and places where they were able to grow their food. So it was being talked about in the Council on Foreign Relations, a part of that called the War and Peace Studies Groups. And what they were saying was, look, we've got to make sure that we control the outcome at the end of World War II. And so they obviously had to have a line into politics in Europe to do that.
And who started Bilderberg?
Well, it was started really by two figures. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who we mentioned there briefly, he was a former SS officer. He'd been an SS officer in the run-up to the Second World War, an enthusiastic one. He convened the very first meeting, Prince Bernhard, as well as a quite shadowy figure, what's called an Eminence Grise, who was working for MI6, according to Stephen Dorrell in his book History of MI6. That's Joseph Rettinger. He was a Polish Freemason, and he was also working for MI6, and he was another one of the main people who put together this very first ever meeting. And back in 1954.
And I was just going to say, when did this first meeting take place?
Yes,
1954. Why shouldn't people meet up in private if they want to?
Well, actually, I think it's fine people meeting up in private if they want to. The problem here is, as Charlie Skelton was saying there, that we've got George Osborne as the Chancellor of the Exchequer with his Treasury team inside this meeting, and they're sworn to secrecy before they go in. As far as I'm concerned, there's absolutely no way any politician should be swearing to secrecy and then going into a big or even a small business meeting like this. Their loyalty should be to us. And if they're going into a meeting like this, as George Osborne is, then basically he's totally betraying his job. He should be sacked immediately. Gets back to Britain for betraying the voters that put him in office and the people that pay the taxes in this country. It's absolutely outrageous that we've got politicians in those meetings, yes, swearing to secrecy.
It's the politicians that's the real problem, isn't it? We can't stop the industrialists and the financial people getting together.
And the military and the royalty together.
No, the military also are our employees. They shouldn't be there without our say-so. What will they be discussing this year, do you think?
Well, we've heard a few ideas. I mean, certainly it's interesting that the cyber warfare chief from the United States is in there. This is becoming a very important issue. We've just had a story earlier on tonight about this fictional Facebook account that was created in Syria. And it seems that the US is, this whole thing of cyber warfare is not just about, trying to stop hacking into, you know, sort of national security and that kind of thing. It's also proactive cyber warfare, where what's going on now is that we've got somebody is out there actually trying to foment conflict and to create
sentiment and actually to generate news stories. So this all this stuff, for example, to do with Libya and Gaddafi's men apparently taking Viagra and raping people. It's very, very difficult to tell whether this is a real story or whether it's fake, because there's a tremendous amount of proactive public relations cyber warfare going on. What's going on with the cyber warfare thing is basically back in the old days in Roman times, you had land warfare. Then we started to have a bit of sea warfare around about the time of Guernica and World War II. Then there was air warfare. This, many of the military see as the new frontier of warfare, like space is another one.
Yes, so as we've heard, it's not being covered on the major news outlets like the BBC. Why do you think that is?
Well, the trustee last year of the BBC was actually in the meeting, but sworn to secrecy. Another reason is that many of the journalists simply don't know it's taking place. Another reason is that actually it's very difficult to turn it into a real news story, because you'd find it's very, very difficult to find out actually what's going on in there. But having said that, they should be covering it, because you've got most of the royalty of Europe do not get together other than at these meetings. Most of the chief executives of all the banks in Europe, including the Federal Reserve, don't get together except in these meetings. So I think it's totally inexcusable for the media not to be covering this event. It's probably the most important event in the Western world during the year, and it's absolutely disgraceful that this has not been on our TV screens today.
Well, as Charlie was saying earlier, he spoke to somebody from the Today programme. He said, what's Bilderberg? I mean, that's how ignorant people are. But of course, you, Tony, have been following them for many years, and you've got a website where you've been uncovering their activities for a long time. What is that website?
Oh, it's bilderberg.org. Back in 1990s, funny, it's a bit of an irony, actually, because at the time, I was absolutely stony broke, but a woman whose sister is a goddaughter of Henry Kissinger gave me 150 quid to actually buy the domain name bilderberg.org and actually to set up my first website. So it's gone from strength to strength since then. And I have to say, I get quite a lot of acknowledgement from other countries in other parts of the world. Usually, it has to be said, outside the NATO zone, because there seems to be a very great deal of sensitivity about this conference, about the media within the NATO area actually ever covering it. But bilderberg.org is where you can go and find out more. What I wanted to do was to delve into their history, particularly when I found out it was started by an enthusiastic member of the SS.
And I understand that you also had a phone call from the Prime Minister of Malawi at one stage trying to get access to Bilderberg.
That's right, yes. This is actually only in the NATO zone, and it's very interesting also what we just heard just then about the Chinese delegates being invited, because you start to realise that actually, NATO are getting a little bit nervous. Why do you think that might be?
I think the Chinese have been invited because they made an ultimatum to the Americans last week about Pakistan. It was covered in the Indian press and the Pakistani press. The Chinese said, if you go into Pakistan again, like you did in Abbottabad, and did whatever they did there, they claimed to kill Osama bin Laden, nobody in Pakistan believes that. The Chinese said, you do that again, and you're not taking on the Pakistani army, you're taking us on. So they probably invited them there to try and calm them down a bit, because they are getting to the stage now where they've really the Russians and the Chinese are absolutely fed up with NATO, fed up to the back teeth. They allowed them to have a no-fly zone over Libya, but it's not a no-fly zone in Libya, is it? It's an all-out war, and that was not in the UN resolution or in the mandate. And the other big powers, including South Africa, Russia, China, are saying, look, we've had enough of you. Stop misbehaving.
Well, I think the people inside that conference building now have got quite a lot of explaining to do about particularly the NATO related. This is another thing that many people don't realise, is actually the NATO Secretary General is introduced to the world banking community at these Bilderberg conferences. So, for example, I can't remember his name now. The latest Rasmussen is the present NATO Secretary General. Just literally the year before he was appointed, he turned up at one of these Bilderberg meetings. So it's really interesting. I can't remember the name of the chap that they mentioned, Charlie, just now. But you will find that the people who are being invited there and are speaking there today, we will see them on the political scene in Britain in the last few years. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I think we can be also certain that the intelligence services are there. And of course, NATO was the basic funders and supporters of the Gladio network in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s, which is basically a terrorist network operating inside Western Europe. They carried out the Bologna bombing in 1980 in Bologna. So
And many others. Too,
I mean,
yeah.
I understood we were going to have Daniel Ganser on here today. We didn't manage to get him.
Actually, Martin, it's funny you should say that, because One Swiss historian has done a lot of work on NATO, uncovering shocking facts that throughout the decades of the Cold War, NATO intelligence in Brussels had been blowing up innocent Europeans, that's me and you, and blaming it on the Russians. The notorious Operation Gladio. And he wrote a brilliant book on the subject called NATO's Secret Armies. When I asked him earlier this week about links between Bilderberg and NATO, he explained to me whether he thinks the Swiss people will be comfortable with Bilderberg meeting in his country.
I'm not an expert on the Bilderbergs, but I know, of course, from the records that I've seen, that Bilderberg, as they were formed in the 1950s, were an alliance of NATO friends who were fighting communism. I mean, that was the whole context of the Bilderbergs being set up. They were engaged in global strategy. They planned for how Europe should develop and where the influence of NATO should enlarge and how one could stop the Warsaw Pact from becoming more influential and so forth and so on. So yes, there is a parallel insofar as the Bilderberg were pro-NATO and anti-Soviet, that is true. And the second parallel with the Gladio Network is that the Bilderberger actually do not hand out records of what they're doing. You know, there's no... With NATO, they had a secret group, which was called the Allied Clandestine Committee, ACC, linked to the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe. And that's where the NATO soldier met. And we, as historians, would love to have the records, you know, of what these generals were discussing about secret warfare and Gladio. And we don't get that data, we just don't get it. And the same thing with the Bilderberger. That is also something that historians would love to research. I mean, they're now meeting in St. Moritz in a hotel, which is sealed off, and we don't get the records. I'm not saying that somebody can meet in private in a Swiss hotel or in a British hotel or in an American hotel. Everybody can meet in private. But if people are discussing geostrategy, and if they have the power to implement geostrategy, then in a system of democratic checks and balances, it will be important for researchers at university level or for journalists or for the public at large who is interested to just get access at the data. And the fact that we don't get access just it steers mistrust, it seems to me. It steers a lot of mistrust. I don't know what the politicians are doing. We had one politician, Christoph Blocho, who was at the Bilderberg meeting, and then after, not this year in St. Moritz, in some other place, and he was at one of these meetings, and people were very curious and asked him, well, you know, what was discussed? Is this very powerful, or is it totally meaningless? And he said, yeah, you know, it was just a gathering of a lot of people talking about global issues. And that's certainly true. And we do have a lot of conferences where a lot of people meet every day in many different places of the world who talk about global issues. I mean, you and me probably also participate in many of these conferences. But the difference, the real difference with the Bilderberg meeting is that people who meet there have a much greater influence as far as wealth and political structures is concerned. And obviously people want to know, do they use their influence for the greater common good, or do they use their influence just to promote their self-interests and harm other interests? I mean, that's a crucial question.
Yeah, I mean, I think our readers, listeners rather, need to understand what Gladio is. I mean, they can always look it up by just doing a search, G-L-A-D-I-O. I mean, Daniel Ganz has written the best book on Gladio, as you say, NATO's Secret Armies. He's a Swiss academic. There have been parliamentary investigations into Gladio in Switzerland, in Italy and in Belgium. And they've all concluded that in actual fact, NATO secret services were involved in terrorism, including the Bologna bomb of 1980, which killed 80-odd people, including the Brabant massacres in Belgium, supermarket massacres where random people were shot at random in supermarkets, the Dortmund bomb at the Dortmund Beer Festival that killed a number of people. All of this absolutely incontrovertible. It's not conspiracy theory, it's history. It was carried out by Western intelligence services as part of manipulation of public opinion. And of course that leads us on to things like 9/11, where 3,500 people died. We've got Richard Gage, who's an architect from Los Angeles, will be speaking at Colston Hall on the 21st of June about the three buildings that collapsed on 9/11, not two, three. He's an expert on all of on these buildings, and he'll explain why they couldn't possibly have come down in the way that the government explains. Now, we suspect And it's not just we, I think the Russian general staff suspect, the Chinese general staff suspect, the Iranian general staff suspect that NATO is in fact a terrorist organisation, always has been, and the people behind it, many of whom actually are ex-Nazis, like Reinhard Gehlen, who was the head of the Gestapo, who ended up as the head of the West German intelligence services in the 1950s. In that period, the old Nazi structures were absorbed into the Western alliance as clandestine structures, and they've been carrying out basically terrorist activities ever since.
But Martin, hang on a minute.
We need our police services to get on top of this.
Martin, hang on a minute, because many of those Nazis were sent down at Nuremberg and hanged.
Some were, and the intelligence people were not. Reinhard Gehlen was head of the Gestapo, and he ended up head of the West German intelligence services. Go figure. And go figure what the Russians thought about that. So the guy's the head of the Gestapo, is now the head of your intelligence services. Great. We don't trust you. Well, we don't trust them. There's all sorts of reasons why we don't trust the Americans or the Chinese or the Russians or anybody. People need to get much more cynical about who the powerful are and what their motives are. We're right on the edge of a crash and a potential world war. It's time we started calling a spade a spade.
Well, one of the main people behind the Bilderberg conference, certainly financially wise, is David Rockefeller. He is the present sort of head, really, of the Rockefeller dynasty, who started in the 1800s as massive oil barons, buying up secretly the railroads that were transporting the oil all the way from the railhead and from the pumping, actually pumping oil out of the ground, all the way to the petrol pump. David Rockefeller will be there, almost certainly, and also another major figure is Henry Kissinger. So why do so many people talk about former US Secretary of State under President Nixon, Henry Kissinger, as a war criminal? Here's filmmaker Alan Frankovich explaining, partially anyway, why.
And if you go down every instance, you go down to Guatemala, you go down to Santo Domingo, where he came up with 35 known communists. And these people were enough of a threat to send in 30,000 Marines. If you go down every instance like that, there always is the first thing, the other side is going to do this. Or, you know, in the case of Chile, you have the famous remark that Henry Kissinger made, which was then publicized after the Allende government was overthrown, that Chile is, it's a dagger pointed to the heart of Antarctica. And nevertheless, they go down, they destroy the government, they kill the president, and they feel perfectly proper to do this. I knew something about CIA operations, but what I didn't understand is the utter ruthlessness and the banality of it. In other words, that it happens day in and day out. And that the people that are involved in this whole process are just, it's like talking to a bunch of insurance executives. They look at themselves as technologists. In other words, they just have, this is a technique for destabilization and destroy. They never come to the moral consequences, never have to face the moral consequences. And you're dealing with a kind of Rotary Club version of a Gestapo. Because they're smiling, they're affable, they're open. I can say that I got along very well with everybody I interviewed in the film. But nevertheless, if you look at what happens at the end of the process.
Oh, that was filmmaker Alan Frankovich talking about his own film that he made there called On Company Business. Well, Bilderberg is not the only politician's club in the world or in history that exhibits cult-like tendencies. Apart from being stuffed with millionaires, David Cameron's coalition cabinet has an inordinate number of members of Oxford's elite Bullingdon Club. The Bully Boys, as they're euphemistically known, keep their membership lists a tightly guarded secret. And even when photographs of the members inadvertently got out to the press 2 years ago, some of the members' faces and bodies had been carefully airbrushed, or as we now say, photoshopped out of the picture, prompting the question, which key figures in public life and the world of private finance are also secretly former members of the Bullingdon Club? The club hold wild, drunken parties, at least alleged to, usually in private hired venues, and are renowned for extreme high spirits, which involve smashing glasses, plates, bottles, windows and furniture in the room that they're partying in. The club have also been banned from holding any parties within 10 miles of Oxford now because of so many venues that they've destroyed. Of the present cabinet, David Cameron, George Osborne, Culture Secretary Ed Vasey and Education Secretary Michael Gove are all believed to have been part of the Bullingdon Club. The Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, is also a former Bullingdon member. And finally, links to the City of London are welded in through Bullingdon Club member Nathaniel Rothschild. Well, never mind about the Bullingdon Club, secret cults have been known to be very close to the heart of government in the past as well. Back in the 17th century, then Chancellor Sir Francis
Francis Dashwood was a member of something called the Hellfire Club, based down in West Wickham. That was a secret society. Despite being the most respectable and prominent people in the country, they joined the club to meet prostitutes, have orgies, and allegedly worship the devil in the caves under the parish church in West Wickham. It all started in 1759 when Sir Francis Dashwood he made a big fuss about how generous he was digging out rubble for a road from his estate to High Wycombe. But the real reason for the road was to open up a network of secret caves on his estate under the church, where he founded the club.
My sole reason for making the road is the welfare of the villagers. I am determined that they shall have employment.
Chalk for the road was dug out of the caves. About 100 men were employed at a shilling a day. Several years later, the caves were said to have been used for meetings of a very strange club, the Hellfire Club. Its regular meeting place was at Medmenham Abbey on the Thames, about 8 miles away. The real name of the club was the Brotherhood of St. Francis of Wickham, but they weren't at all saintly, although the membership did include a Chancellor of the Exchequer, a First Lord of the Admiralty, several members of Parliament and other prominent men. Ladies were also admitted. They wore masks and a badge with the words Love and Friendship.
Well, that was a little extract there from the actual tour that you can do around the present day Hellfire Caves in West Wickham. Martin Summers, one of the most incredible ironies here is that back in between 1762 and 1763, Sir Francis Dashwood, was the cult leader, was actually made Chancellor of the Exchequer. He only lasted a year in the job, though, because the austerity measures and cuts he brought into public spending in the 1700s made him the most hated man in Britain, and he didn't also help public finance.
Well, plus le change. I mean, I think if we think about things like Skull and Bones in the United States, elites have always had these kind of private clubs where basically they compromise each other and basically they make themselves blackmailable. And once they're blackmailable, of course, they can then be made to do whatever the people pushing really pulling the strings want to happen.
So do you think Osborne then is really just a puppet? He doesn't really understand economics? Well, he's being told what to
do? Listen, it's quite clear that Osborne is not in charge. He is being told what to do by the people who are in charge. The real tragedy is that our politicians are not actually up to the job of disciplining the wealthy, overmighty subjects that these people represent. As I mentioned earlier, Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 30s said, "Wall Street hates me and I welcome their hatred." We need to hear that from a British Chancellor of the Exchequer. We need to hear that from a US President. These people should fear the politicians. Instead, they treat them as poodles.
Why is it, though, that, it's a bit of an extreme to compare the Bilderberg to the Hellfire Club. You know, that's
Isn't it? I mean, the Hellfire Club was relatively harmless. Bilderberg, linked to Gladio, as we talked about earlier, nobody has ever been brought to justice for the Bologna bombing. Nobody's ever been brought to justice for the people who died in Belgium. Nobody's ever been brought to justice for all of these people that have been killed through terrorist attacks in Western Europe over the last 30 years. That's a scandal. That's outrageous. We pretty much know who was involved. Why aren't they behind bars? They're not behind bars because they're too powerful. That's got to change.
So who's going to win this struggle then between some elected politicians, some of at least which have, at least are honourable, and this kind of military banking grouping which is represented at Bilderberg in the NATO countries?
We are faced with a challenge that previous generations have faced. Is there going to be a democratic society for our children and our grandchildren, or isn't there? And the only way we're going to make sure of that is if we stand up and fight like hell.
Well, Martin Summers, thank you very much.
The Bristol 2020 Show, brought to you by BCFM 93.2 and Ujima 98 and the Bristol Partnership. Big city stories about the big city vision. Every Monday evening between 6 and 7.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Well, that's all about the Bilderbergs for the time being, because it's National Farm Open Day on Sunday. A great opportunity to get out with the family and actually see some of the operating working farms around the city. I'm just going to go through some of the places that are open on Sunday. Grimsbury Farm, that's Grimsbury Road in Kingswood in Bristol. That is a chance there to meet the animals. A static machine display, self-guided walks and food is available. I imagine fresh food, at least I hope so. And there's also disabled facilities. It's open 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. where you can see the sheep shearing, have a go at goat milking and get up close with the farm animals, farm machinery and a new play park. We're situated just off the Ring Road at Kingswood. There's also Lower Fayland Farm at Sandy Lane, Lower Fayland in Bristol. That's also animals there. It's not just, you're not just watching the plants grow. There's arable beef, sheep, poultry and vegetables. There's fruit and environmental stewardship. The farm shop and retail is also open. The event's a farm walk and picnic and will be primarily for the customers and councillors connected to Nailsea Farmers Market, so you can meet all them. We'll give those existing customers an opportunity also to see how the food is produced and restraints around producing for a farmers market. And there's also Two Pools Farm at Iron Acton in Bristol. That's BS 37. That's a little bit further out at Iron Acton. There will be guided tours of the dairy farm, an opportunity to touch and get to know a cow and a calf from the farm's prize winning show team. Also at Foss Farm at Stratton on the Foss in Radstock near Bath. That's all very welcome to join us at Foss Farm for a free family day out between 11:30 and 4 p.m. A team of local farmers will be offering tractor trailer rides, nature walks, modern and vintage farm machinery display, including big tractors, various stalls and craft area, a barbecue, cream teas organised by the farmer's wife. There will also be cider and pims available. You're welcome to bring a picnic. And no dogs, though, at there. Billow Farm at Breadstone Barclay, that's up in Gloucestershire. That's an arable sheep and poultry farm with vegetables, fruit, flowers and plants. Environmental stewardship, that's open 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. and tractor and trailer rides and nature trails. If you want to find out more about it, just literally get hold of the National Farm Open Day on the internet. And in fact, they've got quite a nice little search service there where you can find out where your local farms are open.
Can I just plug a Speaker's Corner event tomorrow on College Green, where Danny Kushlick, who heads up the Transform agency here in Bristol, will be putting the case for the legalisation of all drugs. Whether you agree or disagree, come along and give us your opinions. It'll be from 1 o'clock on College Green tomorrow.
Well, that's all for this week. Coming up next is Sky News at 7 o'clock. Thanks very much to our guests in the first hour. That's newly elected Labour councillor for Eastville, Mahmoud Khan. Also to the Guardian's reporter in St Moritz, Charlie Skelton. And to John Scobie from Birmingham, We Are Change. And of course, to the chap you were just hearing from then, old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. If you're on broadband internet, you can hear all our previous Friday drive times, including this programme's five-point economic recovery plan, a report on mobile phones and wireless safety, and evidence of Masonic corruption in the police at thisweek.org.uk, and click on the link to our archives. We have 60 million people in Britain and 60 million acres of land, so let's sort it out. And don't let the banksters get you down. See you next week.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.